my name is Georgia Bosco, and travel and charter editor here at Boat, and here to navigate through all the news in the world of super yachting and charter in particular is the wonderful Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, our features director here. What a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. We haven't done one of these before. It's great to be in the podcasting studio with you, Georgia. Great to see you because you've been out and about, haven't you? I mean, we've both been out and about, but we are rarely in the same place at once.
It's very rare that we are here together, but all for exciting things. I have, funny enough, been in Antarctica, which is my latest pursuit. And oh my gosh, what a place. What a place that is. We were extremely lucky to go on board the Hanse Explorer with EOS, and just an extraordinary place. Few things I think could be more exciting and spectacular. So a lot of humpback whales, penguins, and I'm very pleased to say that I even did the polar plunge. Very cold. You're jumping in with icebergs around you, music going, a lot of vodka shots as well. Very, very cold.
I can imagine the vodka was helpful in that situation. But I mean, I can only imagine, how cold was that Arctic waters on a scale of 1 to 10, or compared to your, you know, your Cornish waters? How much were you kind of shrinking up inside yourself?
Well, I, do you know what? I actually can't even, I mean, partly due to the vodka shots, but I can't quite compute it because once you jump in, your mind just completely goes. And yeah. I mean, really genuinely completely goes. You're just kind of, we did it obviously off the stern of the boat, and you are just scrabbling to try and get back to that ladder and your whole body. And I also did it like a complete fool. Everyone else did it very stylishly. We were this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful Swedish girl, and she just jumped in and just loved it, had an amazing time. Linnea, shout out to you for taking it like such a trooper. But I just looked like a fool.
But you didn't. I mean, but yeah, your photos from that trip, I was absolutely in awe. And if I had a yacht, I would be there 100%. But, you know, you've got to have certain things on your boat, right? You can't just head over
you
there.
You do. So Hanse Explorer is actually one of very, very few yachts that can actually get there. And that is partly due to organisation, but also partly due to practicality. I think there are three other charter yachts that you can actually use down there. But it is ultimate logistics. It's hull configuration. But once you're there, you just won't want to leave. And actually, you can't always leave when you want to.
Yeah.
Because actually getting there is particularly complicated.
Yeah. I mean, normally, what was the trip you did? Because there was a certain route you went, right?
So normally you would do the Drake's Passage, which is what most people are slightly apprehensive to do because it's very rough.
Yeah.
We actually cheated and flew straight over the Drake's Passage to King George Island. And a lot of people did message me on that journey to say that I was cheating, but with pleasure, because the Drake's Passage is very, well, you just wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah.
It can be quite rough unless you are sort of the intrepid explorer.
I think that's always one of those things, isn't it? Like I've heard from a number of not only exploration companies, but owners, you know, you get your owners that want to do it all and do every part of the journey, however grisly. But there's definitely a category of people that think they want that until they're in it. And then they think, God, this was horrible. Why didn't I just kind of, you know, leave my captain and my crew to do the difficult bit and join them in calmer waters? It's a tricky one because, I don't know, in a way it feels like a bit of a wuss's way out to do that. But if you've got, well, no, not for you, but if you've got limited time, I think it makes total sense to spend it doing something that you enjoy rather than kind of, you know, getting through the more challenging parts of that journey.
I mean, it's whatever way you do it, it's an extremely long way.
How long did it take you?
So I think, I might get this slightly wrong, but to come back, it was 2 days, 2 full days of travel. But the funny thing about the flight is that you have to charter the plane, and the plane is a very specific plane that was actually built for London City Airport, which has a very short runway. You land on gravel, so there's nothing there, because the whole concept of being in Antarctica is that you theoretically can remove everything, so there's nothing there except for everything that has to be removed. So the runway is literally gravel and mud. Yeah. And you have to have a very specific plane to do that. But of course, the weather there changes in an instant. So actually being able to leave or actually being able to arrive, you don't really know if it's going to happen. So yeah. you hear about the flight hours before, and it doesn't always take off when it's supposed to because it's weather dependent. But they do an incredible job because it's a charter flight.
Yeah.
They have an amazing pesto sour situation on there, which is just, I mean, even we weren't expecting. I think we even flew back in the morning and I was trying to get some shut eye and a pesto sour was thrust into my hand, which I of course had to drink. But they have, you can have music on and they make it very hospitable, but it's definitely where the experience begins. It's in South America, which is the best way to do it. We did it from Punta Arenas, but you can do it a little bit further up where there are some lovely hotels that you can stay in before to make it all lovely.
Wow.
It was actually really interesting from a charterer's perspective. It's a very interesting situation you have with people leaving, because if you have charterers, new guests coming in on that flight and you are supposedly taking that flight, having just been on board, the crew can't strip the beds until you are up in the air.
Because there's a kind of domino effect.
Exactly. But if that happens, then there's nowhere to stay. You can't just bunk in one of the, I mean, there's nothing there. So you wouldn't normally have that, but they do tend to have a rule where they don't strip the beds until the wheels are up.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite cool and quite exciting. Obviously, you hope that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, we actually had that in our issue just coming out. We had our charter special where we had all sorts of great charter content, including this kind of special data report, which we're going to go into in a second. But part of that, there was a sort of charter conundrum story, which I found quite interesting about people asking, you know, both as people who are charterers and also as people who charter their yacht, you know, what if this happens? What if that happens? And one of them was, you know, what if I've booked a 10-day charter and for the first 3 days I can't get out there because of the weather and that kind of thing. And I imagine that sort of thing going on in Antarctica is pretty common, that I think what came across to me is that when you're booking that kind of trip, you just have to go into it with a flexible mindset because there are so many things that might not go to your kind of standard plan and you've just got to expect that. And I think lots of the companies that organize things in those areas are very good at putting on other things for you to do, arranging other arrangement, you know, alternative accommodation and things like that for if and when those things happen.
Well, EOS were very clever about it because they do operate in these places. I mean, from my perspective, it was very exciting traveling across the world and arriving in South America, and just the first dinner, we hadn't seen any ice yet, and no penguins in sight. But that first dinner we had with the guides, and we were just listening about all their experiences and heli skiing and all this extraordinary stuff that goes on. Even the science, actually, was so interesting. They do projects where they drill down into the ice and they can essentially take samples that are millions of years old from the air. So there are little air bubbles in all of this ice. And that tells you climate, it tells you all about the air quality, and it's just, and they record how it changes over millions of years, and it's just hundreds and hundreds of years, and it's fascinating. And that was almost part of the excitement. So it's all, I feel that once the wheels are up at Gatwick, I'm happy. I'm excited.
But it's a kind of proper adventure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, minus the 14 and a half hour flight to Santiago.
I mean, you're a traveller, so you're used to stretches like that. That's fine. A couple of good films.
A couple of good films, yeah. A good book.
So where are you off to next?
So there are lots to come, actually. The office, a lot of people from the office, I've been deploying to various places. We've been exploring the UAE, Saudi. We've got some Croatian exploring coming up, and Granada, and that is, I mean, people are coming out and having a look at these places for charter specifically, Peruvian Amazon, but I mean, there's a long list that I could just go on and on.
Granada has such a special place in my heart because it's where I did my, you know, this somewhat new trend of going on holiday when you're quite heavily pregnant, knowing that you're not going to be able to travel again for a while. So I went there kind of out of season when I was heavily pregnant, and it was just beautiful, and it was quite stormy, and I just kind of waddled around, and thought the Grenadian people were really lovely, really chilled and interesting, kind of nice people. And Croatia as well. I think we're going to talk about that later, because that came up as a kind of, you know, growing destination, as we know. I had an interesting chat with an owner yesterday, actually, a Croatian owner of our owners club. And he was talking about, he owns a, you know, a private yacht, but also a charter yacht out there. And he was saying, you know, when he launched the yacht, which I think was 2009, he felt like he was taking a huge risk kind of launching a luxury product in the market, because at the time, and I remember, you know, the early tourism, you know, it was much more lower end holidays, certainly from the European kind of British market, the kind of places people were going to, and the demographic and the price points were all so much, you know, so far away from the super yacht industry, that it's incredible to see as a destination how that's changed in such a short period of time, and how it continues to kind of expand and develop.
Yeah, I mean, but what a place.
I mean, I've been to really glamorous places too. I've recently been to both Ramsgate and East London. I feel like I can't match you tit for tat on the travel, but it's been great fun. We've been, I think we've talked about it on the podcast at all, we launched our Backers last year, which is the Boat Artistry and Craft Awards. And the whole point of these awards was to award the people that, you know, not necessarily the designers or the owners of the boats, who already get a fair amount of recognition in our various awards programs, but the artisans sort of working behind the scenes on individual pieces and the incredible things they create. And it was such an honour, really, to meet these people in person and to speak to them. You'll get to see the shoot in the magazine and to read the interviews with them. But I found myself interested in things I never thought I'd be interested in. I interviewed woodcarver Paul Juby, who had done these incredible carved doors on board a winch yacht, on board a mower. And he just was absolutely fascinating. And hearing him talk about the complexities and how, you know, for this, he had to use a kind of kiln-dried oak, which made it incredibly hard to push the tool into. So he had to lean with all his physical weight into the tool. And he was talking about the confidence of being an artisan, and how after kind of, you know, years of practice, you have a skill that you don't mind kind of whacking a huge bit of wood off something really quite delicate that you've been working on for hours, because you have the confidence, and that's what makes the lines kind of cleaner and more beautiful. So I was speaking to him, and he was also talking about, he used to work on antiques for years, and he was saying that the antiques trade in London kind of died a death following the World Trade Center, because all the Americans stopped flying over, and they were apparently the people who were paying top dollar for these, you know, incredible, you know, really beautifully made antiques. So that's when he started moving into super yachts. So he was fascinating. And then I also met Grace Aysen, who's a stained glass artisan, and she was talking about the stained glass she'd done on board Renaissance, obviously really exciting new boat, but she was talking about having the stained glass inside as opposed to in daylight, so in, you know, inside the yacht, was a big challenge, because the light acts completely differently and you're using artificial light, and that can kind of flatten the glass. But I think stained glass, I keep banging on about stained glass to anyone who will listen, but
I like it.
I actually think it's better for a yacht than you might think, because it really adds some kind of personality to a design. It can be very colourful and bright, but it can also be kind of pastels. It can be some of the things she was showing us in her studio were kind of hand-painted neon on top of mirror. And because you've got the lead in it, it's actually quite strong and quite stable. You know, it's, you think glass and you think fragile, but it's actually, you know, it's thick and it's bound together. And I think if I was going to have a hammam, or, you know, I wanted some kind of divider for a room, it would be a fantastic kind of element.
I suppose I've never really thought about it. I mean, when you think of stained glass window, you think, my mind immediately goes to the exterior and puts a stained glass window the whole way down the side, which I don't think would look quite right in my mind. But things like that beautiful reflection that you get, you know, if you have a drop down swimming pool where it has a skylight through the pool,
and
that incredible, the way that the light dances, is just such an amazing example of how light can work on board. And I guess I've never really thought about actual stained glass window inside. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, well, her work for this year was a series of panels. So it was almost like a kind of statement artwork. But yeah, I think there are so many different ways in which it could be used on board. And I'm definitely seeing it in residential design as well, that, you know, it's becoming much more of a feature. I think where people used to have kind of quirky tiling and that sort of thing, it's now becoming a bit of a, you know, a new trend and a new thing to do as a way of adding character into
buildings. Yeah, I also really like antiques on board.
I think that's lovely. Yeah, there was an Indonesian yacht, I think it was Dunia Baru, the new owners of it. They kind of brought lots of local kind of Indonesian antiques on board and actually paired it with loads of really light fabrics, lots of white linen. It was lots of whites and neutrals. So it didn't look kind of heavy and clunky and old fashioned. It looked really elegant.
Yeah.
Really nice.
I love that because brown furniture, I mean, recently, careful what I say here, has been quite... It's not very trendy residential-wise. It wasn't.
Yeah, but it's definitely making a kind of revival.
Yeah.
And like everything, it goes in circles.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But if you look on the auctions, which I tend to do in my free time, the price is changing now because obviously the demand is going up because they do just look beautiful. And it makes it, as you say, it adds character, makes it look lived in and... Also, people love to tell you about it, which, I mean, I love to hear about it. So someone will tell you, oh, it's this piece from... There is actually an amazing example of this on board Zenji, which is a lovely sailing yacht with Cecil Wright for charter. And they have, I better get this right, but they have the bar of the Café de Paris in the main saloon.
Wow.
And it's incredible. And it's such a cool feature. And... It kind of really, it works really well because the interiors are quite bright and lovely, lots of light going. And it's just such a cool feature.
Yeah.
And the history of that on board is just amazing.
Yeah, well, some incredible yacht interiors there. And interestingly, some incredible charter yacht interiors, which brings us nicely onto one of the things that we wanted to focus on in this episode. So I mentioned earlier, we've done our charter special. And part of that was this big charter feature that we'd done in collaboration with MEBA, which is, of course, the worldwide yachting platform that's used for about 70% of book charters each year. So they really know their stuff. And we came to them with this brief and they put this data together for us specifically, talking all about what the charter market is doing at the moment, different trends they've seen, different changes. And I thought the findings were absolutely fascinating. So we'll talk about them here today and we'll pick a few bits out to highlight. But there's great news if you're a Boat Pro subscriber, because this will be running online before the magazine comes out. So if you're waiting for your magazine and you subscribe, you can log in online and it will be there and you can see a bit more about what we're talking about. Everyone else is going to have to wait. So first up, the good news is that charter bookings in general are massively on the up. According to the Yachtfolio database, so that's the MEBA database, charter bookings increased 138% from 5,067 in 2015 to 12,074 in 2023. Some of that uptick, as you know, came during COVID when there was a whole new sector of ultra high net worth individuals that dipped a toe into yachting. IYC are quoted in the piece saying that they think their bookings almost doubled during that period. But the interesting thing for me anyway is that that increase is still happening. So there's been a bit of a cooling off. It's definitely not rising as quickly as it did over those very strange years. But it does look as though those new clients, certainly some of them, are here to stay and are now kind of regular charterers. So that's kind of the biggest overarching point to take away. And then the piece goes on to pick out various different trends, as I discussed. So one of the trends, which I think we've seen in owning as well, but perhaps to a lesser degree, but we definitely have seen it in owner, is that charterers are getting a lot younger. So someone, Deborah Blackburn from Fraser, was quoted saying, 10 years ago, it was mostly an older crowd, an average of 50 to 60 years old. Now I'm finding it's 30 and 40-year-olds that are planning charters.
I think we could really dive into that age trend. While there are some wealth changes, of course, and not to high net worth, generational shifts, which are dictated by external factors to the industry, I do think that we could credit the charter fleet with bringing in the younger crowd.
That's interesting. So you think build it and they will come?
I do, sort of. I just think there's so much excitement across the fleet. I mean, if you just look at the new yachts that have come in this year alone.
Yeah, there are some great yachts. And actually, the Charter Special had a piece of, you know, kind of great new charter yachts to hit the market. And we were really spoiled for choice. There were so many. Yeah. And you don't want to, you know, you don't have space to list them all. But there was many good contenders for that article.
Yeah, absolutely. Just really exciting, cool stuff. Like Alchemy, which I was lucky enough to go on board in Antigua, which has got this beautiful wine cellar, which normally wouldn't quite be as on display or usable from a charterer's perspective, but that is fully for the charterer.
Yeah.
And you can go and you can select, and it's such a wonderful feature. Same with Pink Shadow, which was also the new 58.3 Diamond, and oh my God, is there anything cooler? It's just the ultimate explorer yacht. It's one of those sea explorers from with EOS that was created in collaboration with EOS. And it was actually inspired by an epic adventure film set, which is just the coolest thing. And there's sort of a tiki bar, and it looks awesome. But it's also just got all the gear. So it's fully kitted out for heli skiing. It's there. It can be there in Antarctica too. It can be in French Polynesia. It's just, in my eyes, just the ultimate explorer.
Yeah, I definitely think some of these cooler, more adventurous yachts are maybe attracting a different crowd. And we also saw from the piece, Anne Landry at Northrop & Johnson, she was quoted saying, many brokers have also seen an increase in family charters over groups of couples. So I thought that was quite interesting that we're looking at more of the kind of multi-gen family holiday versus, you know, the romantic couples break, I guess.
Yeah, I think there are also just loads of amazing options for families as well. Like, you've got loads of spaces to curl up and watch a film on deck. You've got disco decks for the celebrations. You've got amazing sea toys. Designers, you know, are just doing wonders to integrate these things in. I think the yachts are just, they're just fantastic places to be with family, especially with cool events to add to the excitement. I mean, taking a family to the Grand Prix, I mean, it just, does it get cooler than that?
I mean, it's a pretty good trip.
It's such a good trip. And there are, I think I counted 8 Grand Prix that you could actually consider to be yachting worthy, minus, of course, the 2 that have just been. But I mean, that would just be the ultimate family trip.
Yeah.
And you couldn't hear most of them anyway.
That's true. Well, I certainly think on the design side as well, we're seeing the kind of interiors are much more family friendly in terms of, you know, what the trends are. You know, our interiors book is talking all about this movement in design of things being softer and comfier and cozier, and kind of, you know, furniture and fabrics and things that you actually want to cozy up into and use and live in rather than just looking great. And I think, you know, especially on a charter yacht, you know, obviously you don't want to make marks on your own yacht, but even worse if it's a charter yacht. And I think maybe that put a lot of people off in the past, the thought of, you know, if you've got a 4-year-old running around with an ice cream, well, that's just a recipe for disaster. But I think a lot of these boats are designed in a way now where people can relax a bit more and there's less of that worry and stress about this pristine thing that can't come into contact with any real life.
I like to gauge that with a champagne glass because if you walk on board and you don't feel that you can put your glass down, And that is rare now. I think there are some...
Do you know
some...
what you mean, though? That feeling of,
gosh. And I think that is... I mean, obviously, hopefully you'd be slightly like that anyway. But I do feel there's something where you think, I'm not quite sure if I want to put this anywhere because I don't trust myself. And I do think, not that you're going to go and slosh it everywhere, but I do think there's something to say about these lovely, welcoming spaces that are just meant to be lived in.
Yeah, completely. And obviously we then see a knock-on effect. So if you've got, you know, younger owners, they may be after a different kind of boat, not just in the design, but perhaps they're more interested in the environmental creds of the boat, you know, more green charters, things like that. Maybe they're more interested in exploration. Something I thought was really interesting from the piece is that these, you know, this rise in family charters seems to have had a knock-on effect in terms of actually which dates people are trying to book charters and which points. Someone, Eleanor Bloodworth from WICO, had said, the American market has been steadily growing for a number of years, which has had a knock-on effect on the charter seasons. By far, July and August and December command the bulk of the bookings, but the weeks fringing these months are getting busier. With the increase in American business, there is a noticeable uptick in demand in late June in line with their school holidays.
Wow.
So that season's growing. And Carrie Freeman at IYC, she also noticed, she was saying that Thanksgiving week, which has traditionally been quite a low season priced week, has been getting more and more popular, especially in the Bahamas and the Caribbean. So there are very few yachts available in those locations now, especially for last minute trips. And they're also seeing other yachts starting to add to this week, adding that week, sorry, to their high season and upping their rates at that time because owners are seeing the demand increase.
Wow.
So she wasn't commenting that on that in relation to family trips necessarily. But to me, those big holidays like Thanksgiving, Christmas, 4th of July, they're often kind of big family trips rather than friends. Another thing I wanted to mention that came out of the piece was, you know, we talk a lot about toys on board and charter yachts. Obviously, these days, there's a huge amount of pressure to have all the gadgets and gizmos that everyone wants, and especially families. They want the slides and the, you know, all the things to play with. But one thing that lots of the charter brokers were saying was that an amazing chef was becoming more in demand than ever before. And it was becoming such a crucial part of the whole charter experience. Guests want menus in advance. They want to know who the chef is. They want to take a look at their CV. And I have to say, I did a piece the other day where I interviewed a couple of super yacht chefs, and it sounds like the demands being placed on these guys are getting increasingly insane. Like, they want super yacht, super fresh ingredients in more and more remote parts of the world. You know, people are traveling to places like Antarctica, but they still expect the same standards. The dietary requirements, everyone seems to have one these days, you know, for various reasons, whether it's health, whether it's allergies. And obviously, if you're catering for different generations, if the family holidays are up, on the up, you've got different different demands there. You know, some, they were saying some guests even asking for superfoods to be included in every meal. Some people obviously want local ingredients sourced rather than flown in. So I think chefs have their work cut out today than ever before. It's pretty hard work. But you were going to talk a bit about destinations as well, because the piece managed to spotlight some of the growing destinations and some of the top destinations.
Yes, it was really interesting, actually, for the summer of 2023. So it was actually the usual suspects on the list. So we have Italy concentrating around Sardinia in first place. We had Corsica running closely second, and the French Riviera in third. Greece then sits in the middle, with more of Italy and Provence just behind. It's then bookended by Croatia in 10th place. And I did do a little bit of research into this, and most of the charter activity is concentrated towards the southern region, where you have Split, Dubrovnik, Hvar. But further north, there are just the most incredible spots to explore. Top of my list is Istria, definitely, which is
I love Istria.
Oh,
can confirm. Insane, lovely
beautiful
place.
And it's full of family-run vineyards, got medieval towns, and it's actually a key area for truffle hunting. We're going to be exploring this in the magazine too later this year. But from what I've seen so far, it looks amazing. And then you've got Venice right there on the other side.
So that's where they're going. Where do you think more yachts should be going?
I'm such a lover of Norway. I just think Norway should be getting more of a look in. I just don't think, I have been completely blown away by Norway every single time I've been. And cruising up around the fjord system is staggering. So I'm probably going to butcher this, but Geiranger Fjord. There are some wonderful restaurants up there accessible by boat. And it's just been so special. Do you know what? I don't think I've ever experienced anywhere like this, except for Antarctica. I've got to say Antarctica, just sort of aside. But if you do venture up there, there's this restaurant called Cami Skotholmen, again, pronunciation. And it sits on its own island, and they're very famous for their crab bisque. And it's quite simple, and it's in this beautiful wooden shed. I mean, it is literally a shed.
Yeah.
But it's done beautifully, and it's on the rock, so the kitchen is open planned. You've got the chefs working just literally meters away from the crashing waves. It's beautiful. And I also have to say that I'm sad that more people don't go to the UK.
Yeah, go on.
It's just so, a few months ago, I spoke to the captain of Slipstream, and vowed that cruising around Cornwall was one of the best itineraries they've done. It is just, obviously, you have to have the weather on your side, but I just don't think people realise how beautiful that can be.
Yeah, there is something to be said for that. And I think Scotland as well. I think that was on your list. But, you know, we've just interviewed an owner who's done an incredible trip around there, going to all the whiskey distilleries, and the scenery is beautiful. And it's quite a different, you know, it's a different trip to going to the Caribbean, but it's quite amazing.
Yeah. And people are just put off by the weather, but do you know what? It doesn't rain all the time. And if you go in the peak of summer, I think you will be surprised. Although don't come at me if it is raining, because it does rain a lot, but we love the rain, really. It adds to the character. But there are some incredible places that are becoming more accessible to yachts. Japan is one of them. Thailand, Costa Rica. This is mainly these places getting rid of the red tape that has in the past been fairly challenging to people looking to charter. But these are changing. And these are all places that we are starting to explore in the magazine. So do keep an eye out, because we want to show you that places like Japan are really worth chartering in.
I always think it's quite, you know, the harder somewhere is to get to, the more I find it kind of appealing. Because I feel like, you know, fewer people go there. But that obviously, with yachts, you do need that base level of infrastructure. And if you do have a read of the article, it's quite interesting. We'd kind of split the destinations up, partly by, you know, where are most yachts going now? Then we also had which destinations have the most available charter yachts to book. So they're not necessarily all being booked up, but they're growing. And you can see the shifts in different destinations changing from year to year, and then also kind of emerging yacht destinations. I think Iceland was one of them, actually, although there are hardly any yachts there. I think there was maybe only one or two, but that's kind of a new destination where we're starting to see a couple of charters, and definitely Bali was one, I think, another kind of Asian destination that was growing quite significantly.
So is there anywhere that you think should be on that list?
Well, I think that's a tricky one. Something that Peace notes is that there's been a demand, you know, a rise in demand in adventure charters. And I love those more exotic, you know, destinations, places like Antarctica is on my bucket list, dream list for sure. And obviously it makes for great stories when owners and charterers who've been to those places can come and tell us all about it. Because, you know, there's some incredible things to learn about in those areas. But yeah, some of those places, Indonesia showed the next biggest increase in booked charters behind the Middle East. And Indonesia always looks really interesting to me. And French Polynesia, that's always on my list as somewhere, you know, the scenery there looks incredible. It was interesting. Moran will base the new 60-meter Almaz Entourage there this summer. So I'll be watching that to see where she goes and how much that's booked up.
Yeah, absolutely. French Polynesia, that water just doesn't really get better than that.
Yeah, I know. Have you ever been?
I have. I went at the end of last year, and I have to say that water is extraordinary. It almost glows. It's this kind of milky, perfectly blue, and very warm. I mean, obviously very warm.
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Okay. Well, that's some of the things that the charter piece covers. We'll put a link down below for the Boat Pro piece. Now, shall we move on to the news?
Let's move on to the news.
We've got big news.
We have got big news that came in literally this morning. We have news that the new Kismet is becoming available for charter. And it's just incredibly cool and a really exciting new launch, new delivery for Lursen. That will happen imminently, and that will be available for charter with Cecil Wright.
That's 122 metres.
122 metres, and it is just the most beautiful project. And it's just, we've been hearing about this for quite some time, and I'm just so excited that we're finally here and we're going to see it being cruising around the world. Oh, we're just so excited. And the beautiful 75-metre super yacht Infinite Jest has copied me and completed a trip to Antarctica following her delivery in July 2023. And Do you know what? Since her delivery, she sailed a staggering 19,699 nautical miles across 5 continents.
That's quite... It's nice seeing people getting the use out of their boats. That's pretty good.
It is pretty good. I mean, they really went straight into it. When she left Turquoise in Turkey for her maiden voyage to the Med, she just didn't stop going. She just carried on. And just 5 continents in such a short space of time is just such a great example of how people can explore with these yachts.
Amazing. Well, we've got very nice news this week. The next news is lovely as well. Next news story, which is that the owner of 73-meter Lursen Titania has donated a week-long charter for a charity auction to raise money for Cordwell Children. This is an organisation that aims to enhance the lives of severely disabled children through family support and to improve access to transformative therapies which aren't currently commissioned by the NHS. So a reserve price of €250,000 has been set and all bids must be submitted by 6 p.m. on the 21st of March 2024. How amazing.
It's get bidding. I mean, what another great example of just an incredible initiative. And it's lovely to see. It really is. And a beautiful boat as well.
Beautiful boat. And final news story is that FedShip has crowned a new flagship with the delivery and christening of Project 1010, which we've heard about for a while. She's FedShip's longest super yacht to date at 118 metres and is called Launchpad. It's a beautiful boat and her exteriors are by Espenoino.
It really is beautiful with those incredible, it's got these beautiful curvaceous windows, which just makes up her profile wonderfully. And it's fabulous to finally see her out and about. Very exciting.
Okay, so that's the news. And now we move on to our segment in the podcast when we pick our top brokerage pick. Do you want to go first, Georgia?
I do want to go first because I have found the world's jauntiest super yacht for sale this week. It's the 29-metre converted Targ Sant'Andrea, which has been listed by Fraser, asking just €1.2 million. Come on, how can you resist? It's beautiful. It's very cool. David Legrand, the listing broker, said she has a proven track record of ocean passages to extreme destinations, exactly what we're talking about, while also combining the rugged functionality with luxury. She was built in 1961 with big refits taking place in 97 and 2005. And a cruising range, we estimate at around 6,000 nautical miles. So plenty of range in her inside. There's then 170 gross tons. And she has space for 9 guests in 4 cabins and a crew quarters of 4. The wheelhouse is right forward. So you've got amazing views there, and it's the highest perch on the yacht. On the whole, it's just such a unique yacht and a very low price. Come on, this is just the ultimate. You can't beat that.
I think it looks a bit like a sort of toy boat that you might get in the bath. I think it's the yellow.
Yeah.
Well, for my yacht, I've gone for another yacht with great potential. Much like house hunting, Georgia, you've got to use your imagination here. You've got to visualise. You've got to, you know, you've got to use your creative licence here. Because the yacht I'm choosing is Solstice, which is currently in Greece, and it's only 60% finished at the moment. But it's a 50-metre built by Custom Yachts. Gross tonnage of 957 and room for 14 guests and 13 crew. H2 design are involved with the interior. You mentioned in the office the other day, you know, what does masculine design even mean? We get asked, you know, we see that a lot on press releases and speaking to designers. I think if you take a look at the yacht, you'll get the picture because it's not particularly lighthearted. It's not a silly yacht. It feels more like somewhere where you might do business with Bond villain.
Yeah.
But it's pretty striking and it's got some amazing features. It's got a huge cinema room. It's got a spa and a gym, an owner's deck with a private jacuzzi, which I always love. I always think that's nice with beautiful views of the ocean. And there's also the option with this project, this is the potential I was talking about, to extend the yacht beyond her standard 50-metre LOA by an additional 5 metres. The listing says, led by Alpha Marine, the extension aims to optimise Solstice's exterior shape and create a large aft swim platform.
This additional space would feature foldable platforms and a swimming pool, as well as a 1 meter bow extension. So I bet that extra space would make a lot of difference. Mm. And nice to buy a yacht sort of half done.
Yeah. Almost ready to go.
Well, two great picks there. So lastly, as always, we're going to wrap up with our data story. This week, less of a data story and more of a data boast, really. We always end up talking about data from our yacht tracking system, Boat Pro. Many of you subscribe to it and use it. It is fantastic. And we have recently reached over 7,000 yachts tracked.
Wow.
So I think we must be well past these figures now. But the global fleet we've got down as 12,691 super yachts. And the tracked fleet on Boat Pro is now at 7,022. So some average stats for that. It says the average LOA of a super yacht at the moment is 37.7 metres. In terms of the number of motor yachts, we've got 5,941 and sail 1,081. So slightly more than I would have thought. The number of semi-custom yachts from that 7,022 is 4,343, and the average age of these boats is 18.8 years, maybe a bit younger than I would have expected. And then if we look at how many yachts tracked, we've got in different size categories. Between 24 and 30 meters, there are 2,493. Between 30 and 40 meters, there are 2,504. Between 40 and 50 meters, there are 1,150. Between 50 and 70 meters, 581. And 70 meters plus, we've got data on 294 of those, which I think is pretty impressive, wow. If I say so myself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're tracking all of them. So just a reminder, really, a humble reminder that if you're interested in seeing where the biggest boats, the best boats, the newest boats, or the oldest boats are, Boat Pro is your tool for that. And that brings us to the end of the podcast.
It does.
Thank you, Georgia. It's been delightful chatting with you. I feel like I could have gone on chatting for a lot longer than maybe people want to listen
we
to.
Could but, have done. I think we'll just carry on now without
yeah,
you.
Yeah, well, we'll go for lunch now. Thanks for tuning in. And that's bye from me.
And bye from me. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Adam Geist, and it's a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.